Well, let's turn to God's word this morning as we come to this next part of our studies in Mark's gospel. And again, this series has a title and it's simply called Discovering Jesus because that's what Mark is all about. And again, we see very clearly what Mark is trying to communicate through this gospel. But I want us to start off by thinking about sight. How good is your sight? Well, from the age of 4, I've realized that my sight hasn't been that good at all. And so I've had to wear glasses from that age. For some of you, you have perfect vision. For others, you had perfect vision and you are now perhaps the vision's not so perfect. And I think we all know the value of sight. Sometimes we take it for granted, the simple fact that we can open eyes. And I appreciate now the sun is blinding my eyes, but you know, the sun always shines in Anna Long, so we'll get that blind sorted out for next week. But we know the value of sight. We perhaps take it for granted. Because when we lose our sight, or perhaps when we get something in our eye, or there's pain in our eye, we know very clearly the great benefit of having sight. Well, our passage this morning is all one about those things. It focuses on a man who was blind and whose sight is restored. But you know, the story and the healing is not the story itself. Because Mark has more in mind when he shares this story with us. Because again, what's he driving at? He's pointing us to Jesus Christ and understanding exactly who he is. So, we need to do a little bit of a recap of where we've been so that we understand the context in which we have today's story. So, last week we saw Jesus back in Jewish territory after his ministry in the Gentile world. He crossed there from that bottom part, the southeastern part of the Sea of Galilee, across there to Magdala. And there he was back in Jewish territory and was met by the Pharisees. And they had once again come up from Jerusalem to get answers from Jesus. But as we saw in verse 11 of that passage in Mark 8, they came up to test him. They came up to cause conflict. What they wanted was a divine sign from God that proved Christ's ministry. And Jesus' response to them in verse 12 was this. He sighed deeply and said, "Why does this generation ask for a miraculous sign? I tell you the truth, no sign will be given it." See, Jesus is completely exasperated by the Pharisees and their attempts to frustrate his ministry. But more than this, he will not give the sign that they ask for. If only the Pharisees had opened their hearts, they would see all of the signs that were there in front of them, all the miracles they'd seen Jesus do. That was proof enough of Christ's divine authority. But they chose not to see it. But this all then sparks off a conversation in the boat as Jesus and disciples leave that place and travel to the other side. And in the boat, the disciples have forgotten to bring bread with them. And although they talk about the physical bread, it's Jesus then who wants to make them aware of the spiritual aspect of this. And he warns them in verse 15, "Be careful, watch out for the yeast of the Pharisees." Now, what Jesus is meaning here is the image given by yeast that we use to make bread. And Jesus is saying that the Pharisees continue to show that they are a yeast in bread by their continuing challenges and questioning of him. Like yeast that works its way through the whole dough, the teaching of the Pharisees is doing the same, even to the disciples, because they still don't understand. And in verse 17, Jesus says, aware of their discussion, he asks them, "Why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened?" You see, in reality, Jesus continues to be exasperated. He let out a sigh of exasperation about the Pharisees, and now it's the same with the disciples who are in the boat. So what they do is they cross over now from Magdala up to the north of the Sea of Galilee, just there in that yellow area to the town of Bethsaida. And you know, we've been here before, because it was just west of Bethsaida that Jesus fed the 5,000. But this time they go to the town, whose name, by the way, means house of fish or house of the fisher. And that comes from its main industry, which was the fishing industry. And as we've seen time and again, people bring to Jesus those who need him. And in this instance, someone who needs his healing. It's a blind man who's brought. And you know, we see the faith of the people because what do? They beg Jesus to touch him. That's all they want. And this is very different from what the healers or the self-professed healers of the day would have done. Because the healers of the day would have put on an elaborate show, would have done this and this, and spinned it out for every penny that it was worth. But for Jesus, he's different. Because a touch is all that is needed. Well, again, in verse 23, we see Jesus doing what he's done before. And by the way, whenever we see here, we see what Jesus has done before. Just like the feeding of the 5 and the 4,000, Jesus, what we're about to see, did this before in the Gentile area. So don't forget that aspect to this story as well. Because Jesus, again, just like the Gentile man, now takes this Jewish man outside the village. So Jesus is now, again, distinguishing this man as an individual and not just another person in the crowd. But don't rush past what Mark says here, because Mark says that Jesus took the blind man by the hand. Now, what did the people ask of Jesus? The people asked for Jesus just to touch him. Well, what's Jesus doing here by leading him by the hand? He's touching him. You see, it's not just simply in the touch that Jesus heals. Jesus is determined to heal in his time and in his way. So once outside the village, Jesus replicates what he did in the Decapolis. He spits on the man's eyes. He then puts his hands on him. And we wait to see what happens. You see, this is what is distinctive of this story. It's very seldom do we see this happening, that Jesus lays hands on a person. See, there's great significance in Jesus' tactile contact with people. In the Old Testament, laying on of hands occurs for 3 purposes. First of all, the dedications of sacrifices to God. Secondly, the installation of Levites to the office of priest. And then thirdly, as a means of blessing. Only once in the Old Testament do we see the laying on of hands linked with healing. And in that, it's only a reference to, because it's there with the story of Naaman in 2 Kings chapter 5 and verse 11, when he hoped that Elisha the prophet would come out and would heal him, as the text says, by waving his hand over the spot. That's not exactly what happens, as we know. So this is something different and distinctive in this story. See, here Jesus is using the laying on of hands as a completely new emphasis for his ministry, or in his ministry. By doing this, Jesus is giving God's holy and healing presence onto ordinary, common, and even sinful people. What Jesus does is he brings the sacred to the sinful. He is bringing the healing touch of God by laying on of hands to that person. Having put his hands on him, Jesus asks if he can see anything. And the man replies in verse 24. He looked up and said, "I see people. They look like trees walking around." And you know, we could be very quick to jump on the wagon of the Pharisees who were looking for a sign from heaven and say that Jesus is a fraud and a fake because this healing didn't work. Jesus had set the whole thing up for the man's eyes to be opened. And what does the man say? Well, he sees people walking around looking like trees. But you see, that is not the point of what's going on here. Commentator James R. Edwards says this about this passage. "The healing of the blind man of Bethsaida is the only miracle in the Gospels that proceeds in stages rather than being instantly effected. The necessity of repeated touches cannot imply for Mark insufficiency on Jesus' part. The two-stage cure in the present miracle thus suggests a process of revelation. So this is not Jesus weak. This is not Jesus.